Oliver Nelson and his septet with a nifty little tune called Stolen Moments. This is from the album Blues and the Abstract Truth that was released in 1961, with Nelson, of course, being the arranger, and on tenor sax, Freddie Hubbard on trumpet, Eric Dolphy on alto sax and flute, George Barrow on baritone sax, Bill Evans on piano, Paul Chambers on bass, and Roy Haynes on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Beatrice Lead, and the status remains even more quo today on the coronavirus front, where things remain as daunting as they were just yesterday. It's a matter of degree now. Is it 1 or 2 degrees worse or better? We don't know, depending on where you are. What we do know is that Donald Trump, your venerable president, I give him to you, you can have him, he has found himself once more behind a microphone, yes, and the television cameras trained on him. This is what he wants. And he is, without a doubt, conducting his presidential campaign with other people's money, with taxpayers' money, subsidizing everything he does. Nothing is coming out of his pocket. He's sending checks out with his signature on it to let people know he's thinking of them personally. Now, this is not a campaign ploy, of course. This is just the president, you know, on a one-on-one, establishing rapport with the people he feels empathy for. And as he gives these so-called briefings once again, he's actually campaigning, because he's dealing with issues that are germane to his campaign and that the media feel compelled to carry, as if they don't understand or don't know Trump is using this whole moment as a campaign moment. He has 100% command of the airtime. All cameras are trained on him. He can talk as long as he wants. He can talk about whatever he wants. And the press corps, you know, they've been very accommodating. Nobody seems to ask him questions that bother him or trouble him or that he can't answer. So things are going swimmingly in Washington. You know, if you were to tell people this, say you have a friend from Barbados, or and you keep them abreast of what's happening, they'll tell you straight to your face, you're making this up. No, we're not making it up. This is where we are as a nation, where we are. Now, where we are, according to the Johns Hopkins University, is that so far 212,000 people have died. Have died. 56, no, sorry, I read that wrong. In the United States, more than 56,000 people have died altogether from the coronavirus, 212,000 people over the world have died. And we have a lot of more people confirming, being confirmed as having coronavirus. That number is 988,000. So although things are being packaged to look normal and to keep us, you know, even-tempered and controlled, the numbers say something entirely different. We are far from safe. This coronavirus is far from finished with us and all over the world. It is wreaking havoc. And our president talks only about himself and what he wants to do and what he wants to happen, as if it's, you know, today with Donald Trump and he takes over. And it's all stuff related to his campaign, to prop him up, to enlarge his persona, to make him the stable genius indeed in everybody's mind. It is very sad, though, that we see very little in the way of opposition. Or maybe people are just tired and they're waiting it out until they can resuscitate themselves, because the fight ahead is going to be a long and involved one. And even now, you can't place a bet that Trump is going to lose. Nor can you place a bet that Joe Biden, the Democratic presidential candidate, is going to win. So let's pay some attention to good old Biden for a moment. We haven't really looked at Mr. Biden, because Mr. Biden, for the most part, since this campaign began, apart from appearances in the debates themselves that they had, those miserable show and tells, he really, I would say he was a kind of neutral presence on the stage. He hasn't really come across as having even the energy to run. Or maybe this is just his way, but it's dull. And it is lackluster. It lacks energy. And he has been, for whatever reason, he has been keeping himself out of the limelight and allowing Trump to take the lead in that regard. And I suspect it's because Trump is doing a marvelous job embarrassing himself. You just leave him alone and he will self-destruct at some point. He's made so many gaffes, so many mistakes, so many lies, or as Nancy Pelosi would call them, mistruths. I couldn't believe she said that word. Mistruth? No, it's not called a mistruth, it's called a lie. You could qualify it as a blatant lie, a damn lie, whatever the adjective you want. But a mistruth is not the word. It's not even a real word, a mistruth. But that's what she says Trump tells. Mistruths. And so we have brewing in the background of this, with the coronavirus and with campaign stuff and with the nation dealing with 16, now 17% unemployment, and people breaking the law openly and blatantly because they're fed up of being quarantined in their homes. And even though, excuse me, they are advised to stay home, they defy the law. They say, yeah, you stay home. We need to get out of our home for a minute and enjoy a little bit of life. Now, that could cost them, because the whole point of staying home is to keep the virus off of you. But if you purposefully go out into the open just to embrace a whiff or two of the virus, well, that's your call. And then in the aftermath of this, with all these people, you know, heading to the beaches and going crazy, we are bound to hear about the consequences in terms of new infections, and then people looking to the state to fix it. Well, I don't know that people will be too enthusiastic about that part, about fixing something you were advised about, you had information about, you were cautioned that it was going to be self-defeating to go out there. Stay home for a little while longer and be safer. But, you know, this is America, and people believe they have the absolute right to make these kinds of decisions, no matter what people say is in the interest, the health interest of the community. Community be damned. My individual rights are what matter. All right. So I want to bring your attention today to a subject that so far has not had a proper hearing. And that subject is the matter of Stacey Abrams, who most clearly wants to be on the Democratic ticket with Joe Biden. She wants to be Vice President of the United States. She has qualifications, she says. She has held public office before. She has a wealth of experience. And basically, if Biden knows what's good for him, he would reach out to her and drag her into the second slot as vice presidential candidate. I have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with her having an ambition and presenting her credentials, although it is just kind of tacky to make it known, to tell the world this is what you want more than anything else, and then to backtrack just a little bit so you people can say you have some manners. Backtrack enough to say, well, if invited to be on the ticket, I will graciously accept it. But by then she has already, it's an implied demand. It's an implied suggestion, a strong suggestion to Biden. And I don't know that she has the privilege of doing that. It's very tacky, in my view. I admire the fact that she has a strong will. She has a strong view of herself and her capacity to function as a number two person under Biden, with great, you know, with great aplomb. She feels very confident about it. I think all these things are admirable. But you don't go public, it seems to me, you don't go public and announce, I would be honored to serve as Mr. Biden's vice presidential candidate. He didn't ask you. So you're being presumptuous, you know what I mean? You want to not do it that way. You want to have people put you in front of him and make the case for you. You don't want to stand up out of nowhere and say, I would be delighted to be the vice presidential candidate. The response would be, of course you would, but I haven't asked you. This is an interesting way in which people create attention, an unnecessary tension. So in saying it that way, she covers her butt by saying, well, I didn't insist that I be put on the ticket. I just said I would be delighted to accept a position as the vice presidential candidate on his ticket. It's the same thing, isn't it? When out of nowhere, you go to the press, you go public with your desire to move up in the world and to affix yourself to a candidate who hasn't asked you. That becomes very cumbersome. And in a way, it's a bit of a threat. What are you going to do if he says no? What are you going to do if he says, look, I don't want to talk to you about that. I have somebody else in mind. Thank you. Then comes a big fight, which he would not have started. You and your bad manners, you coat it so it doesn't come off so rough. I would be honored to be on the same ticket with him. I'm sure you would. A whole lot of people would be honored to be the vice presidential candidate on the Democratic ticket. But if that is truly your intention, you should go about it a different way. You're wrong to go through this charade that you putting forward a non-threatening kind of proposal. It's got a threat in there. I don't know what it is. I'll sick the black community on you. I'll steal your black voters. What are you going to do to retaliate if he should say, who the heck are you? To come out of nowhere, grab attention from the media, and make this improbable statement. You should keep that quiet and let me at least first ask you if you want to join my ticket. Perhaps I don't want you to join my ticket. That's one side of the coin. There's another side of the coin that's equally distasteful. And it has not seen the light of day in terms of open discussion and debate, and especially a debate with Stacey Abrams, who describes herself as a strong woman, a strong black woman, a feminist, a person who is very much in favor of justice and equality and fights racism and all that, all the credentials you could pack in there. She has the right to claim, because she's been in these situations before. She has earned a reputation as somebody being straightforward and strident in terms of civil rights. Except there's a little matter that occurred allegedly when Biden was a U.S. senator. This was in 1993. A person who was on Biden's staff had lodged a complaint in that year against Biden, saying he allegedly sexually assaulted her in the hallway, in a hallway in Congress, in the congressional building. And nothing came of the charge. It just fizzled. It didn't really materialize. It vanished. But people had come forward and verified that she did discuss this attack with them, including her mother, and they had concerns. Biden, she claimed, prior to the attack itself, was subtle in communicating his sexual desires by stroking her neck and saying lovey-dovey things to her, which she rebuffed. So she says. But at some point in 1993, they bumped into each other in the hallway. And a brazen Biden, she said, slammed her against the wall and, you know, sexually attacked her, placing two fingers in her vagina right there in the hallway. And after the incident, when she ran away from him, he had that kind of a reaction that, ha ha ha, I got you, and I know you can't tell anybody. You can't do anything about it. But, like I said, she reportedly told her mother what had happened. She reportedly told friends what had happened. And she reported the incident. So there was a formal complaint lodged against Biden. And it mysteriously disappeared. And now Biden, he mentioned it in passing in the course of conducting his current campaign for president. And all he would say is he denied that this ever happened. Well, it certainly shouldn't rest there, in my view. This is something that is very serious, a very serious charge. A U.S. senator in office at the time, you were elected, so it wasn't like you end of your term. You were an active senator. This person worked for you. And you became not only aggressive, but abusive. And then humiliated her. And with a level of confidence that she can do nothing about it. She had no power, she had no rights. And nobody would believe her. Because Biden is a nice Catholic young man, and he believes in God and Jesus Christ, and there's no way anybody would be allowed to tear him down. But the case never came to court. And this young lady is demanding that it comes to court now. That she has been frustrated in her effort to get justice from the court. Biden allegedly has put so many roadblocks in the way that she cannot bring this case, or even if she brings the case, the court system would protect him and attack her. So this is where it is. The case has not been tried. And it just kind of fizzled. But on whose command? But here is where Stacey comes in. Don't you think that Stacey Abrams, wanting to be vice president and all, and being a feminist and being an activist and being a law and order person and a civil rights person, shouldn't this case matter to her as she contemplates looking for the assignment as Joe Biden's vice president, that she should actually want to know, A, where are the documents for this case? And there are documents. And B, why did it fizzle? And C, why did this case not come to trial? And D, why does this woman still remain after 1993, still has not had her day in court against Joe Biden on the matter of sexual assault and the consequent shaming of this young woman, whose only crime seems to have been that she worked on his staff? He was the alleged aggressor here. But this case appears to have been covered up and buried so that it never rises in connection in any way with Joe Biden. Now, if you are so up to date, would you want to know the person that you're seeking to be the second in command to? Before you start talking about what an honor and what a pleasure and what a great thing it would be to join him in his campaign and work as a team, he for president and she for vice president, and this is what you're working with? Don't you want to call that to question? Don't you want this resolved? Don't you want this finalized? Don't you want to bring this up somewhere so we can all know the truth of this, because it is a matter of public record? It hasn't surfaced really formally anywhere, in any court, in any arena of hearing since 1993, which means that there's an intention to cover this thing up. This is not supposed to see the light of day, and especially now that he is 100% focused on capturing the nation's highest office. And that this lady, Stacey Abrams, is talking and letting him know via the media what an honor it would be as a woman to be attached to Joe Biden as his second in command. You see how life works? And she's not asking any questions. Isn't that interesting? I think it's very interesting. So we need to ask, Miss Abrams, is it that you know there's nothing to this case and you are satisfied there's nothing to this case at all? You have examined the documents. You have talked to the young woman yourself. She's available. You have talked to the people she talked to bring it to light. Wouldn't you want to know that? So that you don't end up embarrassing yourself, having basically sold yourself to Joe Biden for a shot as his vice president. Even without him even asking you. You're so eager, you're not waiting for him to ask you. You are offering yourself. And you are saying to the public what an honor it would be to serve as Joe Biden's vice president. But you're not asking questions, and this is a very serious charge. And as a woman, this should concern you. You should want to know what happened to this case. Why hasn't it been prosecuted? Why hasn't Joe Biden been brought into court and made to testify and witnesses called, you know, like a regular trial? He allegedly committed this crime as a regular criminal. Put him on a regular trial. But no, politics is a very interesting thing. You could find ways, as we have discovered together in the course of this campaign, with so many candidates, there are all kinds of things that they could accommodate that they swear to the public they will never do because it compromises their integrity. Really? Okay, so that's my question for the day. How come this case, lingering since 1993 as a formal case against him, how come it has gone nowhere? Not even to say, well, we tried the case and a jury found him not guilty. There was nothing, 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 nothing about this case in the public eye, in the public arena. The only effort made around this case was to shut it down. What do you think? I'll take this break, come back to your thoughts right after this, especially about Ms. Abrams and the conundrum she now finds herself in. Is she going to be a believable candidate no matter whether she sticks with Biden or she moves on to somebody else? The question still remains. Right after this, 888-874-4888. Freddie Hubbard to get us by. I'd like to know what you're thinking about this at 888-874-4888. Should Miss I'm having problems with names for a while now. Is that a sign that I don't remember names well anymore? But she is she to be called into account? Just leave it alone and see what happens, how it turns out? Or should she be confronted with this yawning contradiction? Especially since she and Biden have something in common. Excuse me. What she has in common with Biden is the support of high profile blacks. Al Sharpton has made it known that he would support her. Jim Clyburn, the congressman from South Carolina, who breathed new life and new possibilities into Biden by organizing one hell of a stunning turnaround Biden was politically dead. And Clyburn was the one who played this key role in resuscitating his political career. Now, see how the world is connected? Now, they will be, no doubt, very uncomfortable calling Biden to account. But the fact is, do you think they have an obligation to do so? Or should they just wash their hands of it, and wherever this goes, it goes, they've done their bit? But this is what they have in common. They have in common a candidate who says she wouldn't mind it at all to be Biden's second in command. Oh, she would love that. And she says she's qualified. She pretty much presented her credentials in public and presented Biden a dilemma. What are you going to do, Mr. Biden? And what are you going to do, black leaders? How are you going to respond to the situation? Let's see who we have on the line. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. I lost my, I got it back. 888-874-4888. Isn't it interesting how people are actually entangled with each other without knowing they're entangled with each other? And then we are presented with a conundrum that must be addressed and solved. Khalil from South Carolina, you on the air.
Hi, I hope you're well today.
Thank you. Thanks so much for calling in.
Wow, that's a very interesting question that you have posed and put on the table. I'm straining not to try to get into Stacey Abrams' head, because I'm not a black woman. I'm black, but I'm not a black woman. Now, one part of me feels like she's surrounded by all these inept white men. Her governor, the way her race was stolen from her, the president, his cabinet, you know, most of the people who are running the country now. And she is highly capable. Now, that's in one basket. And I'm quite sure she feels some sort of way about that. I can't imagine she wouldn't. Because most of what I've seen of her, she's somewhat humble most of the time from what I've seen. And she's very careful in how she answers questions. And she answers questions the way I would hope a politician would. So she, when she doesn't know the answer, she will say, I'll do research. I'll find out, you know, instead of making up something. However, now, I don't know. I didn't know that she was endorsed already by these folks that you just mentioned, a congressman from my state and the other folks that you just mentioned. I did not know that. I just thought she was still an outlier.
They've made it known that they agree with her that she is a very good prospect and should be strongly considered by Biden.
Well, this is my question. One of them, has she been confronted by the press about these allegations against her potential boss and running mate?
I don't know, but I'm raising the question.
Yes, and it's difficult. That's this is when this question comes up, it could destroy her. On the one hand, depending on how she answers it. And I'm not going to get into the, whataboutism, you know, because this is just an endemic problem that, you know, we're dealing with in terms of sexual harassment and such. There's a lot to say on that, but it's such a muddy, muddy, ugly, nasty issue. And I think
I appreciate your effort trying to find a way out of where you are, but I'm enjoying it actually.
I have a way out. Oh, I have a way out.
Okay. What is the way out?
Time is running out, and Biden is old, and he's getting older every 2 minutes. He needs to have someone who represent.
He's aging by the minute.
By the minute. And he needs to have someone that represents his faction that is young, vibrant, and intelligent. And this has to happen fast. In other words, he needs to quickly announce a running mate because of his health. You see, that's the other part.
Do you think Biden, this notwithstanding, is prepared to run with a black woman anyway, a strong black woman who is definitive in what she sees and what she wants to do and so forth? Do you think he could put up with somebody like that as a partner?
If he had a coach, a personal coach, to guide him through what might be his first response. It's like, no, Joe, you cannot say that. Don't say that.
So bring us back to the big question. What happens now, you think? Or what should happen now?
Well, what's going to happen that I see, you know, from a political standpoint, is that this issue will not go away. The Hunter Biden and these credible sexual assault allegations that both have to do with Biden, they're not going away. They're just going to be magnified as we get closer to the election. I mean, that's just politics. You have to find your opponent's weakest link and exploit it. But he needs to find somebody quickly, somebody who's credible. He cannot run. No, let's be honest
here. I'm enjoying your pain here. I'm enjoying
this is my pain. What alternative do we have? We cannot put up with this because the Constitution and our lawmakers have let us down. And this is the other question. This is a simple question. Why is it that the for-profit media refuses to answer the wonderful story, this story has legs, of this current president's mental illness and plethora of negative and antisocial behaviors?
Yeah, but that's not going to save
you. Everything goes through that filter. I'm sorry?
What you're saying is not going to save you, because you still haven't addressed the question of how do you deal with this problem?
Well, she's going to have to accept, maybe nothing will happen, but she's just going to have to accept it. If she has latched on to Joe Biden at this point, then that is her wagon. That's her political wagon.
Well, she is not yet attached. Mm-hmm. She attached herself by insinuating that she would be very happy if he were to accept her attachment.
And I agree with you that it was less than protocol. It was a little on the tacky side, like flypaper possibly. But maybe that wasn't the way to go about it. But once it goes back to her, what I would think is her frustration.
All right.
And remember, the DNC is in
today. Thank you, Khalil, for your call. Lee from New York, what are you thinking about this problem?
Well, I've been thinking months ago now that the Republicans are just going to chew Joe Biden up and spit him out, and everybody else that links onto him will get chewed up and spit out as well. They're not going to take this lightly. They're going to rip him. They're going to shred him.
Here's the issue. You're still not addressing what you think is the issue here. The issue isn't whether people will punish Biden via the vote. The issue is, how come this case vanished for so long?
Because
and nothing has been done about it.
The Democratic Party wanted it to disappear.
You believe so?
Yes, I do. Very strongly.
I believe so, too. I agree with you there. So what should happen now?
I think he needs to be exposed. I think we need another candidate. He's not going to be successful.
You have any questions about the Abrams?
From the South and bring up this whole thing and turn the whole apple cart upside down.
Do you have anything to say about Ms. Abrams' responsibility on her end in this scenario that we're just exploring here? Does she have anything to account for?
I say Ms. Abrams has brought herself down to a level that's embarrassing. I'm embarrassed.
Hmm. Wow. I'm scared of you, Lee.
It's stooped very low. That's what I would classify, stooping very low.
Stooping and, very low.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn from New York, you're on the air.
Hey, Therese. I just wanted to say one thing that's a little off topic, but ties in, and it's very quick. Just wanted to know that everyone last night, the New York State of Elections canceled our primary, canceled it. So you cannot vote in the primary in New York State. And I think that this is chilling and frightening and fascistic. And I think that
it could... We'll talk about it tomorrow. But in this situation that we laid out today, what do you see as the challenges as we are discussing them here?
Is that this dilemma with Joe Biden was let out of the bag now because he's not going to be the candidate. And it's kind of irrelevant whatever Abrams says about him. It doesn't really matter one way or the other because I believe that the Democrats know that he's a very bad pick now with the sex scandal coming up and that all they have seen are rave reviews for Andrew Cuomo. I believe at the convention that they will end up putting Andrew Cuomo in as the candidate and Joe Biden will somehow fall away to the side and all of this conversation will be irrelevant. He cannot be the candidate because with the sex scandal and then
the thing
with his son,
he is the candidate
to try to get
for all intents and purposes. He has been sanctioned as the candidate, the presumptive candidate, I should say.
But you are allowed to go to the convention and you are allowed to nominate another person. And let's say Joe Biden doesn't actually even make it to the convention. Let's say he gets coronavirus, okay? Let's say something happens. I mean, there has to be a reason.
Gwen, hold back on the vitriol here. Let's say he gets coronavirus.
I don't think he's going to end up being the candidate. And if he is the candidate, I think the Democrats for sure are going to lose, except for if Trump...
What do you think of Abrams' situation in all of this, since she has been bold enough to offer herself as a willing candidate to be Biden's vice president? What responsibility, if any, do you think she has in all this?
In regards to what's happening with this affair, I think that she has a responsibility to come out and say that the Me Too movement is for everybody, even the person running for office. But I don't think she's going to do it because this is such an incredible opportunity for her, and she on her own seemed to be a very impressive candidate. And I don't think the Democrats would ever let her speak about this publicly because it would just totally finish him off. So I don't think – I mean, come on. Anybody knows that she's not going to come out and say anything about this. She's just not. She's not in a position to do it. And I personally, I don't hold your breath waiting. That's what I think. I think she's a good candidate. I thought it was great the way she fought, but in a way I kind of feel disappointed too because she seemed like such a progressive and then to kind of capitulate under the banner of Joe Biden was like, well, I fight, but not for everything and not all that much because she seemed like a very progressive candidate and he's not a progressive candidate. And just the idea of even, what happened with the primary last night, somebody should have come out and said something about that. And we don't have anybody in our herd of the Democrats doing that. So I also think the Democrats are going to lose a lot of votes because of closing down elections. So I don't see a good thing on the horizon. I did think up till what happened yesterday, I did think that I've heard many, many people talk about Andrew Cuomo being the last minute pick.
But you're not talking about Andrew Cuomo. We'll talk
right.
about Andrew Cuomo tomorrow.
If I was in her position, I can only tell you what I would do. I don't know that I would be able to gussy up to the platform speak badly about my boss and then go back and say, can I have that job anyway? I don't think she'd get the job if she spoke out. She's not the only one in the running.
Well, thank you. Bill from Brooklyn, you're on the air. Hello, Bill.
But I just had to call and give my feedback, my opinion, which probably isn't going to be go over too well. But as someone who went to that school up in New Haven, Connecticut, where Miss Abrams went to, we tend to be a very sort of heady group, a.k.a. Bill Clinton, Hillary, and George Bush all went to Yale. So did Stacey Abrams, went to Yale Law School. But I think she doesn't have a chance. And as a black man who loves black women, have my grandmother, my mom, my sisters and aunts, and all beautiful black women out there, I think that Miss Abrams does not have a chance. I think she stepped up way too soon to put herself in this untenable position, which will result in Biden pretty soon ruling her out. First of all, I think the wounds are too open right now, post Barack Obama. I don't think the country has moved beyond a black president, such as Mr. Obama, who I was greatly happy to see in office. But things are so polarized that with a very strong and dynamic black woman in the form of a Miss Abrams, and she certainly is qualified, that she would overshadow Joe Biden to the point where he would pretty much be...
No doubt about
again.
That.
But I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Really is. So she has a great opportunity before her. Does this mean now that she also has a great obligation to openly confront it and to openly confront Biden about it?
In a moral world, in an ethical world, in a non-political world, yes, but she won't. She's too eager for the position, and she's demonstrated that. So pretty much she's taken herself out of the running. There are other candidates that I think are much more viable, and I think she could have been viable if she had perhaps waited and allowed things to sort of marinate and move forward. But I just think she is such a dynamic, powerful presence that in the mindset of the American majority, at this point in U.S. history, will not have someone of that stature, almost like a Barbara Jordan, who is just amazing. The country's not ready for that. And I think, that's unfortunate. I would certainly love to see that. But my main focus right now is getting Mr. Donald John Trump out of office come November 3rd. And so that's got to be the focus, bar anything else.
All right. So I'm wrapping up. We had a little glitch there for a minute. I want to thank you so much for listening and contributing. And we'll come back to this because this is not going to go away. But we'll come back and talk about it just the same. And we want to talk about that canceled primary tomorrow as well. Thanks so much. And we'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.